isn't appreciated as such in their home village. They come back to their village and they just remember like the kid that when he was a little boy and he hung around and he did these things, and so they see him in that way. Visiting my family in a little town in upstate New York, and they had no idea, really no idea about Krishna consciousness and life and devotion. They knew I was doing something a little different than them, but they really didn't understand. And I didn't, because of the certain circumstances, unless they asked me, I didn't make any attempt to help them understand, other than they were happy that I was happy, and I was happy that they were happy that I was happy, and I left it like that. So one time, Pranjanya Maharaj Dasa, Rati Lal Patel, who was a motel owner in Syracuse, came to pick me up at my home. And he's, you know, Pranjanya Maharaj, elderly man, and so he came with his wife, and they got out of their car, and there I was with our family sitting out in the lawn, and Pranjanya Maharaj came over, and he's an elderly man, you know, graying hair and well-to-do person, and he and his wife came out, Dandabhat's pranam, right in the yard. And my family members looked at him and looked at me. And and Pranjanya Maharaj stood up with his hands folded and said, "You have no idea how fortunate you are to have a brother and a son like him. He is sadhu." It just went on and on, and they looked at him and looked at me, and they didn't know what was going on. Because I was their brother, and, you know, or their son, and that's all they knew. So that made a distinct impression on my sister, because later on I found out she spoke with somebody, and, oh, you know, they really like him in that group, that organization he's with. Anyway, Vidura, when Vidura returned to the palace, because, like Arati's question, no, Jairati's question about having great appreciation for a sadhu, the Pandavas, they were in the position to recognize the attainment that Vidura had reached. They saw him as a liberated soul, not just as their uncle. And so they, Yudhishthira, being the respected, he was the emperor, and he's the elder amongst the brothers and respected amongst the whole group, so he was the spokesperson. And I'm going to read what the questions that he posed, and I want you to take note before I begin. The second statement that he makes, this is a very important and often quoted verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam. You'll probably recognize it as soon as I read it, and we'll comment on it. He's making the statement that Vidura is himself a place of pilgrimage. Persons like you are themselves a place of pilgrimage. This is where that comes from when you hear that. As Yudhishthira said, "My uncle, do you remember how you always protected us, along with our mother, from all sorts of calamities? Your partiality, like the wings of a bird, saved us from poisoning and arson." So, maybe a bird protecting her baby birds. You ever seen that? And there's a person that was into taking care of animals. They called it America Animal Husbandry. They were Vaishya. They're very concerned about animal protection. So they had a large property, and their property was filled with animals. And one of the animals that they had, one of the birds they had, was a big goose. Mother Goose and her little baby, whatever you call them. Little babies. Little baby geese. And I didn't know better, so I just was walking towards the pond, and the Mother Goose looked at me. She raised her beak and started charging. And I started running. I ran for the house, and she didn't stop because I was running. She pursued me right until the door was I opened the screen door and jumped because in the summertime, and she came right up to the, she was protecting her little baby geese. Because you don't go near the mother when she's protecting her little baby birds. I mean, I'm not gonna fool around with it either. Just made myself scarce. So, Vidura was like that. Poetry of the Bhagavatam, again, is very wonderful and very appropriate. The mother bird protects her baby birds very, very carefully. And so Vidura was in that position because his brother, Pandu, had died. So he was taking a surrogate position like of the brother looking after the children of his deceased brother and protecting them. And so there's two mentions of Vidura's protection. One of them is very explicit. Yeah, the first one that's mentioned is the case of poisoning. So I'd like to describe that little story. When Pandu by mistake, or not just mistake, it was a mistake. He fired an arrow at two deer and killed one of the deer who turned out to be a sage who had transformed himself into a deer and was engaged in union with his female companion also in the shape of a deer. And so as the deer was dying, the deer began to speak and it was the voice of the sage, and he explained, he wasn't cursing Pandu, but he explained that there would be a great sinful reaction for this activity. And Pandu's heart was very, very heavy. And but there's nothing that can be done to because he had made this serious offense to a Brahmin and violated principles of conduct of a Kshatriya by killing the deer in this particular circumstance. So just before leaving his body, the sage, in the shape of the deer, said that you will die in the same way by having union with your wife. If this ever does take place, that you will instantly die. And Pandu's heart was so heavy at the whole situation that he explained to his wives, Kunti and Madri, that I'm a great offender, and so I'm going to leave my royal position in the palace, I'm going to reside in the forest. So for a long time he resided in the forest. They pleaded to stay with him, and something like Sita and Ram, and so they pleaded to stay with him, and he finally relented. And for a long time they remained in the forest. So while he was in the forest, the Dhritarashtra set himself up as the king, and Duryodhana and Dushasana and the rest of them, they got very comfortable with the idea of being in charge around here for a long time. So they, you know what that's like. Somebody gets the sense of being in charge around here for some time. They don't want to give it up. So after some time passed and the five Pandavas were born, while Pandu and Madri and Kunti were residing in the forest, sure enough, as providence would have it, Pandu became very attracted to Madri and he died in that surf. And so there was a decision between Madri and Kunti who would stay and take care of the five children, some of whom were Kunti's children and some of whom were Madri's children. And it was finally decided that Madri would go and assist her husband by entering into the funeral pyre of Pandu, and Kunti would remain look after the five children. But it was understood between the two of them, and some instruction by one sage was given, that she should immediately go back to the palace. So she went back to the palace, and now the rightful heirs to the throne were the Pandavas, headed by Yudhisthira. So this was a whole dynamic of change in the politics of running the royal palace. And Duryodhana didn't like it. And to make matters worse, Bhima was a very powerful personality. And Duryodhana didn't like that at all. So he decided, by conspiring with Dushasana, let's kill Bhima. Let's have some fun, we'll kill Bhima. Bad, right? So they decided the way that they would kill him, they would poison him. Because Bhima was known not only as being very strong, he was also known as being able to eat a lot. A voracious eater. The plan was made that a palace was built along the side of the Ganges for the Pandavas, and the sons of Dhritarashtra would also go there, and they would have a big sporting event in the Ganges. So the Pandavas went, and the Kauravas went, and Bhima was so strong that he would just pick people up and throw them in the water, and then hold them underwater and splash water in their face. And he was just so powerful. It humiliated, it angered Duryodhana so much. So personally, he prepared Dukuri, the poison, and put it in the food, enough poison to kill 10 people. And got them all worked up, playing in the sporting in the water, and it was lunchtime. So Duryodhana personally fed the food that he had personally poisoned and watched Bhima eat it all, and nothing happened. Especially, it was in the cakes, in the sweets, because Bhima liked cakes and sweets and all those things. And nothing happened. And as the afternoon passed on, he was just going strong as anything. But finally, towards the end of the afternoon, Bhima showed signs of fatigue. He was getting a little drowsy. He wanted to take a rest. Duryodhana was thinking this will be the rest that he'll never wake up from. So as he took rest, the Pandavas went into the palace, and Duryodhana and Dushasana personally bound him up with strong ropes and threw him into the Ganges to drown him after poisoning him. But a very miraculous thing happened, that the body of Bhima somehow was carried into the land of the celestial Nagas, and they have another kind of poison, and they bit him ferociously, and it just happened to be this very exact potion that would neutralize the poison that Bhima had been fed. The poison was neutralized by the Nagas. And the head of the Nagas immediately recognized who Bhima was, and he had this power of knowing events beyond his own jurisdiction. And so he knew exactly what had happened. So they gave Bhima great care and treatment, and for 8 days he was unconscious. And when he regained consciousness, the king of the Nagas explained the whole thing, what Duryodhana had done, the whole plot. And to honor Bhima, they gave him very special ornaments, very special garments, very special food, and there was some pots of some beverage. They didn't have the Sanskrit thing, it was just translated as a beverage. Some kind of elixir that by drinking it, it would make one invincibly strong. And one, normally what would happen is one pot would be shared by many people. But they knew that Bhima was a voracious eater, so they brought out 8 pots. And in one gulp, he drank each pot. And 8 pots were gone. And Bhima's body became as strong as 10,000 elephants.
Wow.
And then they sent him back. So Bhima was already strong, but now he was more strong. So strong. So he was directed by the Nagas how to get back to the very spot where he was tossed into the Ganges by Duryodhana and Dushasan. And he went back to the royal palace. Meanwhile, when everybody was in this palace, and it was the evening time, and they couldn't find Bhima anywhere. They figured maybe Bhima, he was very tired, maybe he went back to the palace early. Let's go back to the palace and we'll see if he's there. But when they got there, he wasn't there. So they reported to Mother Kunti that we don't know where Bhima is. So Kunti naturally became very concerned. And the first person she went to take advice from? Vidura. Because Vidura was always seen as very, very wise. And like the mother bird protecting all the baby birds. So she went to Vidura. Said, what do you make of this circumstance? As far as I can see, Duryodhana, he's so envious of Bhima. Maybe he did something to harm him. And by Vidura, don't worry. I assure you, the sages, they've given their indication. No cell phones allowed in the assembly here. Oops, except for C.U. Ramana's.
No.
You'll be glad to turn it off, right? A little respite. Okay. So, Vidura said, the sages have said that your sons will live a very long and prosperous life. So whatever has happened, rest assured, Bhima is okay. And because the degree of confidence that Kunti had just hearing Vidura's words, she was completely calmed. When Bhima came back and explained what had happened, then Vidura gave again his advice. So Yudhisthira was very expert at diplomacy. He could understand this Duryodhana. He's a very dangerous person. And Shakuni and others who were conspiring with him, they were equally dangerous. But the main plotting personality is Duryodhana. But if we disclose what Duryodhana is, that we know what Duryodhana has done, then it will make an enormous uproar in the family. And maybe even a calamity, a war or something. So let's just not say anything. He gave that opinion. And then they consulted Vidura. Is that how we should handle this? Vidura said yes. Just be very careful of Duryodhana. And so from that day forward, the understanding was there. Duryodhana is ready to kill any one of us. Your cousin, but watch out. Very dangerous person. Yudhisthira is reminding Vidura of how you helped protect us through the poisoning of Duryodhana. And then the other mention here is of the arson of Duryodhana. So, do you know that story? No? Okay. You're going to learn a lot of stories this weekend. Maybe you'll remember some of them. You can ask her this evening if she can. This one, Dhritarashtra was directly involved with. They requested Parochana to build a little country cottage built with highly inflammable material and to make it extra flammable to put shellac, or called the House of Lac, so that a match and instantly it would ignite and burn. So the idea was, we have a very nice gift for the all of you Pandava brothers. We want you to have a very nice, comfortable home where you can be very, very happy together, and it's just a gift from us to you. So Purochana built the house, and once the house was built, there was a whole scene in the royal palace where they were all departing. And Vidura spoke, I'm going to read the words from Adi Parva, that Vidura spoke kind of in code that to Yudhisthira. And everybody heard it, but nobody but Yudhisthira understood it. But here's what he said. A weapon made of steel or any other material element can be more than sharp. Excuse me. A weapon not made of steel or any other material element can be more than sharp to kill an enemy. And he who knows that is never killed. Like a riddle. Weapon not made of steel or any other material element can be more sharp to kill an enemy unless one who knows about this, and then one will be safe. And then he said, fire cannot extinguish the soul, but can annihilate the material body. But one who protects the soul can live. And Kunti asked her son, Yudhisthira, what was Vidura talking about? Some riddle, I don't get it. What was the meaning? And Yudhisthira said, he was letting us know that there's danger. That they knew that Duryodhana and Dhritarashtra involved in the whole plot, that their lives were always at risk. So the risk specifically was not a weapon, but the risk was fire. Later on, Vidura in disguise and informed them on the 14th night of the waning moon. In other words, when it's a dark moon, it's pitch black. No moonlight, certainly no streetlights. And on that particular evening of that particular phase of the moon, the house is going to be burned. So beware. And he left. And he heard the whole discussion going on. As Duryodhana said, he's a spy in our own midst. So he informed the Pandavas. And by informing them in the middle of the night, it was the doorkeeper that was going to set the house on fire. And so they escaped through a tunnel. And even Dhritarashtra and Duryodhana, when the funeral was made, some bones were found inside some bones found inside the burned house. Everyone thought the Pandavas were dead, except for Vidura. Because he knew they're somewhere safe. So the Dhritarashtra and Duryodhana, that they were pretending, oh, how horrible, how unfortunate. We've lost our dear relatives. Ha, ha, ha. And, of course, the other family members were actually bereaving, but Vidura was not at all. So Yudhisthira is reminding Vidura of his protecting them. Now, Prabhupada comments, this is a very important point. It appears, like sometimes it appears that Krishna is partial to the devotees and admonishes the demons, so he's partial to one and smashes the other. But we understand from Bhagavad Gita that Krishna is impartial. He sees all living entities equally. But although seeing all living entities equally, the treatment is seemingly preferential. So Prabhupada comments the same about Vidura. This is a quality of a sadhu. There's a marker board over here, but what I'd ask for was sheets of paper that we could mark and we could write stuff on and refer to them later in the course of this seminar. But this is what we have instead. So at the very end, I'm going to ask for somebody that has good handwriting, and I'm going to ask you, so if you have place you can keep notes or some place where you store it in your memory. What are qualities of a sadhu? So that's what this section is, qualities of a sadhu. So I'm just now identifying one of the qualities of a sadhu, and that is that they... A sadhu sees all personalities with equal vision. Vita samadarshana vidyavanaya sampane brahmani gavi hasani shuni chaive sapaki cha pandita samadarshana. So Vidura had that quality that he saw all with equal vision, but his dealings, although he saw equally, his dealings seemed to be partial to the Pandavas. So let me just read how Prabhupada explains this. Two sentences. Mahatma Vidura knew very well the intrigue of Dhritarashtra and company, and therefore, even though he was a faithful servitor of his eldest brother Dhritarashtra, he did not like his political ambition for the sake of his own sons. He was therefore very careful about the protection of the Pandavas and their widow mother. So this is the part. Thus, he was, so to speak, partial to the Pandavas, preferring them to the sons of Dhritarashtra, although both of them were equally affectionate in his ordinary eyes. Then he explains. He was equally affectionate to both the camps of the nephews. So both of them, the relationship, the family relation was they were nephews. The sons of Dhritarashtra and the sons of Pandu, and their children were his nephews. He was equally affectionate to both camps of nephews in the sense that he always chastised Duryodhana for his intriguing policy against his cousins. He always criticized his elder brother for his policy of encouraging his sons. And at the same time, he was always alert to giving special protection to the Pandavas. So now, seems contradictory. But the point that's being made that resolves the apparent contradiction is he was no less affectionate for his brother, Dhritarashtra, or his nephews, as he was affectionate towards the Pandavas. But because they were doing something wrong, he was displaying his affection by criticizing his brother and trying to check his nephews. And that was part of his affection for them. Say it the other way. It's not an act of affection if you see someone who's very dear to you and they're doing something very harmful for themselves or others or both, and you don't say anything. I don't see it. I don't hear it. I don't speak it. That's how I display my affection. So Vidura knew how to appropriately display affection in circumstances that needed to be very carefully and expertly addressed. He did it. He did it very straight. Another quality of Vidura. Very straightforward in his dealings. Although, as we just read, he knew the art of diplomacy. He knew how to say things indirectly and, you know, around backside, and he knew how to do that. In that particular circumstance, he did that, and he disguised himself and disclosed. So he knew diplomacy. But for the most part, his dealings were very, very direct. And his affection was equal, although his dealings were diverse. Quality of a sadhu. Yudhisthira goes on. While traveling on the surface of the earth, how did you maintain your livelihood? At which holy places and pilgrimage sites did you render service? And now comes this verse, it's text 10, for those of you that want to know where this is from, chapter 13, text 10. Very important verse from the Bhagavatam. My Lord, devotees like your good self are verily holy places of personified. Because you carry the personality of Godhead within your heart, you turn all places into places of pilgrimage. This verse, a sadhu, this is a quality of a sadhu, they carry the personality of Godhead within their heart. Now hopefully, we all carry the personality of Godhead within our heart also, as do all living entities. So what's the meaning of that phrase, that they carry the personality of Godhead in their heart? It means that because of their deep attachment and deep appreciation for the, because of their Krishna consciousness, because of their Krishna consciousness, Krishna manifests himself to their consciousness. So they're always conscious of the fact that Krishna is there within their heart. And Yoga Maya Samavrata, Krishna conceals the fact that he's within the heart of everyone. Naham Prakasha Sarvasya. To those who are inimical towards him. So because they have that quality of strong devotion and love for Krishna, he's always manifesting himself to the very seat of their consciousness. They're aware that Krishna is guiding them at every moment of their life. And because of that, that person is a place of pilgrimage. And wherever they are, they turn that place of, the place where they are into a place of pilgrimage. In Chaitanya Bhagavat, there are nice descriptions of different places where Lord Chaitanya visited. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he makes his commentary on Chaitanya Bhagavat, explaining that wherever Lord Chaitanya went, it is the mission, is part of the Gaudiya Math mandate to establish a shrine and place the feet of Lord Chaitanya in those locations. Maybe some of you have seen the feet of Lord Chaitanya in Vrindavan, near Govardhan. Or maybe you've seen them in Sri Rangam. Some of you have seen that. I've seen them there. In Gate, just outside the main dwaram, and to enter into the Sri Rangam temple, there's a very tall shrine. Shrine meaning, it looks something like our Vyasa-san for Srila Prabhupada in the Chicago temple. It's a little smaller, and it's made of stone instead of wood. But it's very much shaped like that. And instead of having a Prabhupada murti underneath, they have a slab that has an impression of Lord Chaitanya's feet. And Bhaktisiddhanta established that there as the place where Lord Chaitanya visited, because it makes that, because of his visiting there, it makes it a place of pilgrimage for the followers of Lord Chaitanya. And Maharaj Pratap Rudra, he wanted to do the same thing when Lord Chaitanya was heading towards Vrindavan, meeting Jagannath Puri. He sent his military to accompany Lord Chaitanya so his travel would be very safe. They had all kinds of provisions, and whenever they had to cross a river, he told that at this river crossing where Lord Chaitanya crossed the river, a shrine should be erected to mark where Lord Chaitanya crossed the river. Of course, we have something like that here in America. There are places where George Washington slept here, and he crossed the River Delaware at this place, and there was this battle over there, and George Washington did this and that. I was visiting upstate New York, and Van Buren slept here, because he was 9th President of the United States, and he came from that area, so. But that's material, and that person, like Prabhupada explains, they're long gone. Where's Martin Van Buren today? He commented about Napoleon's statue. There's a statue that, in a very humble way, Napoleon had a statue of himself made in Paris. during his lifetime, and then the insignia in the statue said, Napoleon is France, France is Napoleon. And there he was in a statue form. So Prabhupada commented, if this is France, where is Napoleon now? France still exists, but where is Napoleon? Who knows where Napoleon is? So such material markings and commemorations are quite different than the spiritual consciousness of a sadhu who's making wherever that sadhu goes sanctified by their Krishna consciousness, because by their Krishna consciousness, Krishna manifests himself there. Just like Prabhupada said, one other example, is Prabhupada, if you look closely at the purposes of ISKCON, in Prabhupada's own handwriting, in his own language, one of the purposes of ISKCON is to establish places of pilgrimage of Lord Krishna. Now, how can you establish? Here we are in America. Krishna never came here. How can you establish a place of pilgrimage to Lord Krishna? Because Krishna appeared in Vrindavan, there's a place of pilgrimage for Krishna. And Mathura, Krishna was born there, and Dwarka, Krishna was there, and Kurukshetra, Krishna was there. And wherever Krishna was, there's a place of pilgrimage. So how can you establish a place of pilgrimage? So the answer is, Prabhupada's understanding is, where glorification of Krishna takes place, and where the deity form of Krishna is installed, then that becomes a place of pilgrimage. I heard Prabhupada say it three times, twice when visiting our temple in Henry Street in New York, and once in Manhattan. Three times, in four visits, Prabhupada said, this temple is not in New York. It is in Vaikuntha. And you walk outside the door, it sure doesn't look like Vaikuntha. And sometimes how some of the devotees behave themselves, it certainly doesn't seem to be Vaikuntha either. But the temple itself is Vaikuntha, because the Supreme Personality of Godhead presides. That's what Vaikuntha is. So the temple is not in Rogers Park, not in Chicago, it's in the spiritual world. And our consciousness should match the place. At least that's what we're aspiring for. Becoming Vaikuntha Vasis. By proper regard for the deity and the servitors and devotees of the deity, and respecting them and serving them in various ways, then that's Vaikuntha consciousness or Krishna consciousness. So this particular verse, text 10, is saying that a sadhu is themselves a place of pilgrimage. In fact, they sanctify places of pilgrimage, because the pilgrims go to a sacred place and they deposit their sinful reactions in that sacred place and then leave. So the sadhu, when going to the sacred place, he absorbs those reactions by the fire of his devotional service and purifies even the sacred place, or sanctifies even the sacred place. So, very important verse. Yudhisthira glorifying Vidura as a mobile tirtha. The language that's used, bo tirthanti kurvanti. So, my dear uncle, you must have visited Dwarka, because he was on pilgrimage. You must have gone to Dwarka. You've gone for 35 years. You must have gone to Dwarka. In that holy place are our friends and well-wishers, the descendants of Yadu, who are always wrapped in the service of Lord Sri Krishna. You might have seen them or heard about them. Are they all living happily in their abodes? And Prabhupada explains, I want to read a little bit of the purport. He focuses on the word Krishna Devata. Krishna Devata, which means those who are always wrapped in service to Lord Krishna. And the point that he's making, so Yudhisthira is speaking about Vidura. Actually, no. Yudhisthira is speaking about the members of the Yadu dynasty. Because the members of the Yadu dynasty, they're always wrapped, R-A-P-T, not W, but they're always wrapped in attention on the personality of Godhead. Now, Vidura, so this is the quality of a sadhu. They're Krishna Devata. They're wrapped in attention on the personality of Godhead. And Prabhupada makes the distinction. Vidura, at this time, he's a sannyasi. Now, Vidura was married when he was born of the maid servant of Ambika. His mother was a Shudra, Shudrani. So it so happened that his wife, Vidura's wife, was similarly a child produced by a Brahmana and a Shudra combination. So he married similarly a wife of similar birth. And when this insult of Duryodhana came, when he left the palace, he was a fast forward for him. He didn't go through Vanaprastha. He renounced completely. And when he returned, there's no mention of his wife. It's something like when it's an interesting cultural discussion to talk about when Ram was banished to the forest, he went and told Sita, "You please stay here till I come back." But Lakshman, he didn't go to Urmila and say, "You stay here till I come back." He just left with Ram. No conversation, he just took off. And Vidura, same. There's no explanation of why he did like that or anything. That's what he did. So when he came back, he was a sannyasi. He was a self-realized, liberated soul, renunciate. But here's Yudhisthira speaking about the Yadu dynasty members who were living in Dwaraka, that they were same Krishna Devata. They were wrapped in attention, and for that matter, Prabhupada comments, is that the Pandavas, they were also completely absorbed. What was Arjun thinking about, or Yudhisthira thinking about, other than serving Krishna? But their position was very different. Yudhisthira and Arjuna, they were grihasthas and kshatriyas. And Vidura's position was, by this time, he was a sannyasi. Now, spiritually, they were practically equal. At least the way the Prabhupada describes this. Now, Vidura certainly had some advantage. He had heard extensively from Maitreya. But because he was in the renounced order, and he was in this liberated position, they were offering their respect to him. A cultural point. But practically speaking, the emphasis that Prabhupada is making in the purport is they were on the same level spiritually. Read what he says. Yeah. Maharaj Yudhisthira was therefore on the same level of devotion as Vidura, although engaged in the state affairs of the kingdom of the world. So, in our day-to-day life in Krishna consciousness, as aspiring devotees of Krishna, we have our different ashrams. Some are sannyasis, some are soon-to-be sannyasis over here. Sooner the better. Just ask him. So, sannyas, vanaprastha. I see one brahmachari over there holding a camera. Trying to be a brahmachari anyway. The camera's wobbling. And many grihasthas. So, by the varnashram system, we offer respect to those in the renounced order. And that's a cultural point. But as far as Krishna consciousness is concerned, anyone in any ashram can be as equally spiritually successful as anyone else in any other ashram. Culturally, we have our system of offering respect. Spiritually, we also can recognize anyone can become fully Krishna conscious, fully spiritually successful. But that to be fully spiritually successful isn't easy. To be mediocre, that's a lot easier. Not even that's not easy, but it's a lot easier than being fully spiritually successful. So to be a fully spiritually successful householder, one has to be wrapped in attention on the personality of Godhead, and from that wrapped attention, very detached. Instructed us very clearly, it's not the position of a devotee to be negligent in ordinary dealings. One should be very attentive in ordinary dealings. Why very attentive in ordinary dealings? Because they're for Krishna. If you're wrapped in attention upon Krishna, you'll be very attentive to do very nicely in school and to respect your mother and father and to not hit your brother. Be nice to your brother. In all matters, worldly, to do them very, very attentively because it's for Krishna. So the essence of the successful, realized householder is rapt attention in Krishna. And sing. Prabhupada explains it the other way. Anyone can take their white cloth, stick it in a writ package of dye, make it come out orange or saffron or whatever, and presto, renounced, right? No, doesn't work that way. One can change the color of one's cloth, but rapt attention upon Krishna is the real test. So this is another, when we get our board out, we're making some items. There's a quality of a sadhu. So one can be a sadhu from the renunciate position or from the householder position. Particularly Vidura is being honored because of the degree of his renunciation and the degree of his rapt attention in the personality of Godhead. And properly, culturally, Yudhisthira is respecting him for that. Almost done with this section. He goes on. Thus, being questioned by Maharaj Yudhisthira, Mahatma Vidura gradually described everything he had personally experienced, except the news of the annihilation of the Yadu dynasty. Compassionate Mahatma Vidura could not stand to see the Pandavas distressed at any time. Therefore, he did not disclose this unpalatable and unbearable incident, because calamities arise of their own accord. Now in the purport, Prabhupada points out the Chanakya Pandit Sloka, saying that one should not be the bearer of bad news. I've had this experience of being the bearer of bad news from time to time. Huh? Well, there's something psychological that happens. What happens is the feelings that the person has about the bad news, they repose on you. You didn't do the bad thing. You were not even around the bad thing. But you deliver the bad news, and the bad feeling gets projected on you. I've experienced it.
the fastest of things to behead.
Behead. Just to bear the bad news. Off with your head. Well, sometimes people don't off with the head, but they treat you that way. So, but Vidura wasn't concerned about losing his head. What Vidura was concerned about was the feelings of the Pandavas. He knew that they would suffer, and as it says in the verse, suffering comes of its own accord. You don't need to magnify it, or increase it, or accelerate it. But there is some phenomena. This is the position of a sadhu. Sadhu is one who is very tuned into, or a buzzword these days, is very sensitive to the feelings of others. And the words that I speak, or I don't speak, what effect is that going to have on another? I'll give a very nice example of that from this first canto, when Ashvatthama, these are names you don't know anything about, right? Ashvatthama was the son of Dronacharya, and Ashvatthama was a nasty guy. When the Pandavas, the five Pandavas, right? The five brothers. You know who the five brothers are? Yudhisthira, Bhima, Arjuna, Nakula, and Sahadeva. Five brothers. You know Arjuna, right? Bhima, we talked about Bhima. Real big, strong, powerful. Right? Bhima. He could eat anything and defeat anyone. Bhima. And Yudhisthira, he was the elder brother. And they're two younger brothers. So, in the middle of the night, in one tent during the battle, Ashvatthama snuck into the tent where the five sons of the Pandavas were, and he cut off their head. He cut off their head. He thought his father would be very pleased. So he brought the heads dangling by their hair to his father and presented them to his father. Look what I brought you. His father was disgusted. So when Arjuna came to find out that the sons, his son and the other brother's sons, had been beheaded in the dead of night while sleeping by Ashvatthama, he took a vow to Draupadi, the wife, the mother, I will bring back the head of Ashvatthama, and when it comes time for taking bath at the funeral of your five sons, you'll be able to take bath standing on his head. He was a Kshatriya. He captured Ashvatthama and he brought him back, standing before Draupadi, holding his hair in one hand and his sword raised in the other, ready to chop his head off. And Draupadi said, "Don't do it." And Bhima said, "Do it." And Yudhisthira said, "Draupadi's right. Don't do it." And Krishna said, "You won't be doing wrong if you do it." He said, "Ashvatthama, he's the son of a brahmana. So if you kill a brahmana or a son of a brahmana, there's great sin. But because of what Ashvatthama did, he cannot be considered a brahmana. Although he's the son of a brahmana, his conduct is not that of a brahmana, so you can kill him. There won't be any reaction for you. No problem if you kill him. In fact, it's a good idea." So here's Arjuna with two different ideas. Don't kill him and kill him. So we also have decisions to make in life where do it, don't do it. And there's reasons to do something and reasons to not do something. We have to make a decision. So you can think of religious principle. But Krishna had already taken care of religious principle. It's actually when one who is a plunderer and a murderer like this, capital punishment is appropriate. And you don't need to be worried about being... So we also have situations where we have to balance religious principle. just like when Satyavati, you mentioned this afternoon, Satyavati was asking Bhishma, Grandfather Bhishma, to produce children with Ambika and Ambalika. He said no. Because you're referring to a principle that the dynasty has to be continued, but there's another principle, and that the principle is truth has to be upheld. And I put upholding truth above maintaining the dynasty. Then he also said that think more deeply about this, Satyavati. What is the will of providence? What is the divine will in all this matter? Your two sons, they've both been untimely dead before they were able to produce children. So is not the will of providence clear? Think deeply about it, Satyavati. So we may also, anyway, the situation was worked out by the brilliance of Bhishma. There was another brother, Vyasadeva, or half-brother, step-brother. So Krishna provided the intelligence of how to resolve the problem. So rather than, we may also have to face decisions in life where there's do something and don't do something, and there's reasons to both. Do something and don't do something. So one has to think very, very deeply about the circumstance. And what Arjuna did in that circumstance, you know what Arjuna did? I'll tell you. He thought, if I act, how will other people be affected? Who will be pained if I do or don't do this? That's where his thought went. And his thought went, the mother of Ashwatthama is the one who will suffer. Kripi will suffer. He'll be gone, dead and gone, but the mother of Ashwatthama will suffer, and therefore I won't do it. To satisfy Bhima and Krishna's encouragement, he humiliated him. He cut off his jewel and most of his hair, just leaving a few straggled bits of hair, and sent him in banishment for the rest of his life. So he was, for a Kshatriya to be put through that humiliation, it's worse than death, without killing him. They killed him without killing him. Worse than killing him, without killing him. But Kripi was not left bereaving like Draupadi was left bereaving her sons. Vidura was in this situation. They're asking about the Yadu dynasty, but I'm not going to tell it. I know it happened, but I'm not going to tell it because I can't bear the suffering. They've suffered enough already. I can't bear the suffering with Vidura, so suffering comes of its own accord. I'm not going to accelerate the suffering that comes of its own accord. I'm not going to. So he didn't even answer the question. Now it's interesting. It's not noted here, but I was noting it when I was studying this. Vidura, how did Vidura know what happened to the Yadu dynasty? He was told by Uddhava what happened to the Yadu. He asked the same questions. Actually, in the beginning of Vidura's questions to Uddhava, Vidura already knew the answers. But he knew about Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan. He knew about Krishna's pastimes in Dwarka. He knew about the dissolution of the Yadu dynasty. He still asked Uddhava, because he just wanted to hear from Uddhava. So Uddhava disclosed to Vidura, whereas Vidura didn't disclose to the Pandavas. Interesting. Because the Pandavas, he felt, it was Vidura's assessment, the Pandavas have suffered too much. No need to increase their suffering. But Vidura, he was in a very renounced and very purified and very elevated position. So Uddhava decided to disclose to Vidura. So what's right in one circumstance may not be right in another circumstance. It's very, very difficult sometimes. We're all caught in such difficulties of understanding what is to be done and what is not to be done in a particular circumstance. Should I disclose or should I not disclose? But at least one should be thoughtful, not just blabber. That's one thing. Then the thoughtfulness that should go is, how will the other person be affected? Not just, what will make, you know, what do I feel like right now? Do I feel like disclosing or not disclosing? Do I feel like killing Ashvatthama or not killing Ashvatthama? What do I feel like? It's not what I feel like. It's how others will be affected by what I do or don't do, what I say, what I don't say. And this is another crowning quality of a sadhu. They're always considering the welfare of others. They do and they don't do according to the welfare of others. That's their code of life. They're devoid of self-interest, and they simply, everything they do is what will be for the upliftment and betterment of others. And if not, just like the tortoise, withdraw the limbs from within the shell. I will not speak. I will not do. Or I will speak or do only if it's for the betterment and upliftment of others. Otherwise, there's control of the senses. And the opposite is the standard that we experience in modern society, and as aspiring devotees, we should be very careful about this part of our life. Speak in such a way it will be uplifting and beneficial for others. Otherwise, don't speak. Or something that my mother used to say, if you can't say something nice, don't say anything at all. Wisdom of mothers. If you can't say something nice, then what is saying something nice? Well, I wasn't taught what is something nice. I was given a material sense of what is something nice. So here we're given a spiritual sense. What's in the interest of the soul? What's the capacity of the other person that will help elevate them? It takes association with the sadhu to develop that kind of vision. Anyway, so I find this very inspirational, very instructive and very inspirational. Just two more verses and we're done with this section. Thus, Mahatma Vidura, being treated just like a godly person by his kinsmen, remained there for a certain period just to rectify the mentality of his eldest brother, and in this way bring happiness to all of the others. So why did Vidura come back to the palace? He needed a break from being on the road for a long time, right? He had to have a big, he missed the Sunday feast for 35 years and he had to have a Sunday feast. Just his relatives, and he was feeling homesick. Just like many of the people that first come to America. And I met a devotee couple this weekend, this past weekend in New Vrindavan. So Anil's new wife, Neil Vegi Raju. He lived in the Chicago area for a while, and then he moved to Delaware and just got married, and his new wife has moved into America, and immediately just seeing her I could think, she must be feeling so homesick. Because you know how it is in America. You come and you don't know anybody, and nobody knows anybody, and nobody's friendly, and it's horrible. Go next door and say hello to anybody because they got a big dog in their yard. It's culture shock, and there's no friends, and it's awful. The main theme here is bringing happiness to others. Completely lost with that. Okay, so he came back to the palace, not for his own purpose. He came back to the palace because he had one concern, Dhritarashtra. No one else could help Dhritarashtra. So he came back for that reason and that reason only. So this is another crowning quality of a sadhu. They're filled with compassion. And it was more of a hardship for him to come back to the palace than just to stay on pilgrimage. He was completely at peace on pilgrimage. So he came to relieve Dhritarashtra of his situation. And it says that by doing so, all others would be happy. As the chapter unfolds, we're going to find out what their immediate reaction was, and it wasn't happy. They were very worried about elderly Dhritarashtra and so on. But ultimately, happy. We'll get to that later. The purport, Prabhupada is explaining that the position of, so it's a cultural point for us to consider, the position of Yudhisthira extending his hospitality to his blind uncle, Dhritarashtra, was completely befitting. But it was unbefitting for Dhritarashtra to accept the hospitality. It was unbefitting because he had no business remaining in that position. He was remaining in that position because he was thinking, still I'm king. He was holding on to his delusions of supremacy and lordship. But he was blind and, anyways, infirm and certainly not in any position to rule any or lead anybody. He was physically blind and spiritually blind. He couldn't lead anybody. But he was holding on to that notion. So it was unbefitting for him to accept the hospitality. And he was doing so because in his mind there was no alternative. And this is a very important part. A quality of a sadhu is that they will help others to understand the spiritual alternative. Some people, they're blind to all alternatives, certainly a spiritual alternative. So sadhus have to be very expert, very careful, and very expert to present the spiritual alternative. It's very difficult when people are very attached. But as Prabhupada explains, that's the duty of a sadhu. Because who else is going to do it? It's exhausting. Just thinking about it's exhausting. But that's the duty. Prabhupada writes, it's the duty of the enlightened souls to deliver the fallen ones. And what does the enlightened soul get back from the fallen ones? Get out of here. Leave me alone. Etc. So I'd just like to read in closing how Prabhupada expresses this. Talks of spiritual enlightenment are so refreshing that while instructing Dhritarashtra, Vidura attracted the attention of all the members of the family, and all of them took pleasure in hearing him patiently. So he was entertaining the others with his spiritual talks. But meanwhile, his focus of attention was relieving Dhritarashtra of his attachments. This is the way of spiritual realization. The message should be heard attentively. Here's very important instructions. message should be heard attentively, and if spoken by a realized soul, it will act on the dormant heart of the conditioned soul, and by continuous hearing, not just a one time and then space, but continuous hearing. That's what Vidura did. He heard for a sustained time. And this is a theme in this chapter. Hearing for a sustained time with great attention. Then one can attain the perfect stage of self-realization. So we just want relief from hard weeks of work, and we come to the temple on Sunday and kirtan and deity worship and nice association, nice prasad, and go home, ready for another week. That's nice, but there's more than that is needed to take the gift that Prabhupada and our acharyas are trying to give us. We need to maintain very strong sadhana, and as far as possible, when there is, just like this weekend, it's going to be medley of hearing and discussing Krishna Katha, it'll be very invigorating. I know I'll feel very invigorated. I hope some of you through the course of this discussion will also. And it's the sangha of the people we really want to be with, devotees of the Lord. Doing that in a consistent manner over a period of time, we're very fortunate. I understand on Tuesday, Radhanath Maharaj is going to pay a visit too. And I think Giriraj Maharaj, and he's going to make his annual visit to Chicago. We're fortunate here, getting the association of nice devotees. So when those nice devotees come, we should receive them very, very cordially and warmly, just like this chapter is describing. Hear with great attention, and not just feel good, but deeply contemplate the message that's being passed on and try to incorporate that in our life. And gradually over a period of time, by that descending mercy of Krishna coming through those saintly persons, become uplifted and spiritually improved. Anyway, so that ends the section. Next, Dhritarashtra is going to be pulled aside by Vidura, and he's going to let him have it. Stay tuned. So, any comments or discussion on this? The question was, when Draupadi said, "Don't kill Ashwatthama," was it sentimental or spiritual? The basis of that. Sentiment doesn't mean not spiritual, first of all. So was the sentiment material or spiritual based? Primarily it was materially based, because her thought was, "I'm suffering, and because of my suffering, I don't want to see the suffering of another, the mother of Ashwatthama. I don't want her to suffer like I'm suffering." But it's compassion, but it's not directly upon the soul. It's compassionate in another way, but devotees of the Lord are also compassionate in that way. We don't unnecessarily want to inflict or bring suffering upon others, even in the mind. Because when that suffering in the mind is there, it may make it very difficult to go forward on a spiritual path. With that view in mind, one can take a consideration of something that's going on in the field of the material energy, even subtle material energy, and be very, very careful to address that carefully, properly, so as to not make obstacles on the spiritual path. One connects with the other, in other words. can see acting appropriately in the field of the material energy as part of one's duties in Krishna consciousness. Yeah. Premananda.
Okay. My question is, Maharaj, in Bhagavad Gita, Lord says that follow my instruction. And he asked Arjuna to kill Pali. And other incidents, Krishna told him to kill Asura.
Do it, and he hesitated.
Okay. So that's one condition. For all the conditions who are like us,
yeah,
we are taking guidance from the spiritual person.
That's right.
Now, if he says one incident, then do that. So we do that. And one incident, if he says, do that, and if you don't do that, then what happens?
Okay. Understand the question, everybody? You put me on the hot seat here. But I brought it up, so. Sometimes, so if one is not very advanced, we don't have much flexibility. Do this, when the spiritual master says, it's a rope, it's a rope. It's a snake, it's a snake. Whatever it is, whatever it is, that's it. Now, in this particular case, so do it, don't do it, just do it, don't do it. But, now there are some circumstances where, let's say in this particular case, what Krishna wanted, Arjuna was very, very expert devotee. He knew what Krishna wanted. What Krishna wanted was that Arjuna exhibit his religiosity. That's what Krishna wanted. So when he said, do it, what he wanted was that Arjuna exhibit his virtue and character by understanding the deeper meaning of what Krishna was instructing. But that's a little risky for those of us that are not advanced like Arjuna was advanced. So if we hear from a spiritual authority, which to speak of Krishna, our spiritual master, or even to some spiritual authority, do it. And it was firm. It wasn't, you can consider this, then whatever you want to do. Just give it some thought or whatever you want. It was, do it. So there may be some circumstances for advanced devotees where there's some test involved. Sometimes I've had the experience where it's deliberate. He gives some examples where Prabhupada tested devotees in that way. Well, here's one. So, just to keep it, you're asking for an explanation, so the explanation is there are some circumstances where that superior authority or spiritual master or Krishna is testing the individual, us or another person, to see what are they made of. So Arjuna was advanced enough to know that's what Krishna wanted. Now, so to reduce it to something that's very simple and easy, we're not so advanced. So when we receive an instruction, do it, it means do it. And when we receive an instruction that says don't do it, it means don't do it. It's very simple. But there may be circumstances like this one where there's something else that's being that Krishna wants to disclose. And we may sometimes, again, just going back to the example, real life situations that we have to face, where we may not have somebody standing as spiritual master or Krishna telling us do it or don't do it. We may be in a situation where we know that there's scriptural indication to do something and scriptural indication to not do something. And we're caught in not being really, really clear what's the right thing to do. That's not what you're asking, that's another situation. In our case, we So the right thing to do when we're in that situation is we take it to a superior authority. But then comes the test of the superior authority listens very patiently, asks a lot of questions, and then gives a very clear directive, do it. But if, so there's no point to go and ask that spiritual authority, what is your instruction for me, if we're not prepared to carry out the instruction. We're wasting our time and their time. We can go ask the wind, or flip a coin, or something else. So if we go to someone who's in a spiritual authority position, the answer we may get may be, here's some advice. It's a little bit like what Vidura did with the Pandavas and saying, beware of fire. He didn't say don't go. He said, beware. It's advice. So sometimes, I know this from practical experience, when somebody asks for some advice, that's all they want is advice. They want to make their own decision. I'm very familiar with that territory. And so it's not a good idea to give them an instruction. Because if they fail to carry out the instruction, then they'll spiritually suffer for that. So then it stays in the category of advice. Or to help them, even better is to help them make a wise decision. That's more difficult, actually, is to train somebody how to make a wise decision. It's much easier to say, just like a child. It's much easier to say to the child, don't do this and do that. Then you walk away. You're not there to tell them, do this and don't do that. They're doing that and not doing this. So you got it just the other way around, because you're not there to tell them. It takes more time, it's more trouble, but it's much more durable to train somebody how to make a wise decision. Education. Spiritual education. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Go ahead. Even though Maitreya is known to be very scholarly, he was apparently not in the same
mood.
Spiritual platform like Uddhava.
Yeah. That's
love
right.
For Krishna was not like that of Uddhava.
Yeah.
And you also mentioned that Uddhava's association gave great benefit to Maitreya.
Right.
How was he chosen to be the one there along with Uddhava? The last two people, two personalities who were there with Krishna were Uddhava and Maitreya, right?
Yeah.
What was the special?
There's no indication. There's nothing disclosed by our acharyas that I'm aware of. It's just he got some special mercy. Really special mercy. The last one to be with Krishna before he left the planet. Special mercy. Special mercy. He was wandering around in the forest and there was Uddhava and Krishna. Actually, it reminds me of, in the discussion, when Maharaj Parikshit, when he heard this description, he had a question for Shukadeva Goswami. He heard this whole topic going on. And here's his question. At the end of the pastimes of Lord Krishna in the three worlds, and after the disappearance of the members of the Vrishni and Bhoja dynasties, who were the best of the great commanders, why did Uddhava alone remain? So when Krishna left, he made sure that the Yadus and the Vrishnis and the Bojas, and they would all be removed from this earth. But Uddhava was left. Why?
No.
Shukadeva Goswami is going to answer the question. We'll hear from Shukadeva Goswami. My dear king, the cursing of the brahmanas was only a plea, but the actual fact was it was the desire of the Supreme Lord. He wanted to disappear from the face of the earth after dispatching his excessively numerous family members. He thought to himself as follows. It's very confidential. We're getting the mind of Krishna disclosed to us by Shukadeva Goswami. He thought, he didn't say it, he just thought as follows. Now I shall leave the vision of this mundane world, and I see that Uddhava, the foremost of my devotees, is the only one who can be directly entrusted with knowledge of me. Uddhava is not inferior to me in any way, because he is never affected by the modes of material nature. Therefore, he may remain in this world in order to disseminate specific knowledge of the personality of Godhead. That's why. Shukadeva Goswami then informed the king that Uddhava, being thus instructed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the source of all Vedic knowledge and the spiritual master of the three worlds, reached the pilgrimage site at Badri Gashram and engaged himself there in trance to satisfy the Lord. So before he went to Badri Gashram, there was a little interception. That was Vidura. Vidura met him, and Vidura downloaded all the files. Not just information, though, but the deep spiritual appreciation of love that Uddhava had for Krishna. And then he went to Maitreya, and then he came back to Hastinapur. Yes?
My question is in regards to your lecture in the afternoon.
Okay. Okay.
The fact that it's still creating confusion in the mind is, on one hand you're saying that Vidura is very virtuous, wise, righteous person.
Yeah.
And at the same time you said that he had to go for 35 years before he met Maitreya to be purified.
And therefore what's...
I'm not understanding purity.
What's ahead of us? What do we have to, how many years do we have to go on?
I certainly do have that thought.
Was that your question?
No.
Oh, okay.
What I was thinking was purification from what? Because on one hand you're saying he's one of the best individuals, like as a devotee of Krishna, he's virtuous, he's wise.
Yeah.
But at the same time he spent 35 years to purify himself.
Yeah.
So purification from what?
Okay. You want to answer this question? Is that you're oohing and aahing over there?
I mean, I could say something, but maybe I'll hear.
Go ahead. Were you making all those noises?
No.
That was you.
No.
Maybe I'm hearing things. Well, we can both answer that question. Purification from... What it says at the very beginning of the chapter is that after hearing from Maitreya, so he was preparing himself to be a perfect oral recipient of the message of Uddhava and Maitreya. So purification was once he heard from Maitreya, Uddhava and Maitreya, he had absolute realization that devotional service to Krishna is everything. So, in this world, there may be wise people who understand the details of finesse and how to act and how not to act, what is moral and what is immoral, what is proper, what is improper, how to navigate this very complex situation of material existence, and in the quality of goodness, to be a virtuous good person. And that's not the same. Platform of goodness is not the same as Shuddha Sattva, or the language that's being used here is Krishna Devata, wrapped in attention in the personality of Godhead. So what purification from the fog of material identification, which obscures rapt attention upon Krishna. He was fearless. When he spoke the way that he spoke before the assembly when Krishna came, he was not afraid. And he was a very straightforward person. So he was sadhu-like, but still needed further purification, complete attachment to Krishna.
Yeah.
There are too many chords on this thing.
The room is very small, so.
The room is small and the chords are short.
It's a very good point that you mentioned that Uddhava had this special quality, a very, very special, rare personality. And Vidura is close but not very close enough. As Maharaj quoted Lord Krishna and Uddhava, they are the two people who are very extremely super elevated. Lord Krishna, he never gets contaminated by anything. On the contrary, he purifies whatever touches him, whatever comes in contact with him. So there's no question of purification for Krishna. From external point of view, Krishna sometimes performs varnashram duties and they may seem like purificatory processes also. He participates in many great